Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Toyota Brookhaven services all makes and models. That could be why we were voted best service department the past 2 years. Come see why. Exit 40 Brookhaven or online at toyotabrookhaven.com. Great service, great savings. At Toyota Brookhaven, we deliver.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Good morning, good morning. Coming to you today is a marvelous, marvelous opportunity for us to talk about this very, very hot summer. Lots of fireworks both in the garden and in the skies. I know there'll be some tomato conversation today, so let's get started. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning. I think something might have just happened on our screen, but we'll work out some details. How is it going down there this morning?
Well, it's beautiful. It's absolutely a lovely, lovely day. I have to say that this is one of those times of year when you can feel the air as you open the door. It sort of grabs onto your arms.
Yeah, well, it's been pretty muggy around these parts. I don't know about you in there, but a little light breeze of 3 to 5 miles an hour, it doesn't do a lot. You know, you got to have the big fan out there and, you know, make sure that the animals are getting some breeze. But we hadn't had the huge thunderstorms other than one or two that we had for like every day. So I think, you know, everybody's probably on a watering schedule now.
I think so. This is when you have to really look around your neighborhood, because there's going to be somebody that does not have a rain shutoff on their irrigation system. And so in areas where the lawn already has plenty of water, for example, you might want to encourage them to put in the valve that will keep it from coming on when it's actually raining outside, or when it has what it does is to measure the soil moisture and turn on the sprinkler when it needs it, as opposed to every day at 2 o'clock or whatever, you know, however you might have set it.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't think about those things until one of the lines breaks. Then all of a sudden there's a gusher in the backyard and you realize that you should have been paying more attention to the irrigation system. They can be wonderful, but they can also be a lot of trouble if you don't take care of them, like so many things, you know.
Well, the world is, you know, busy for summer. We just had the big 4th of July. I don't know if y'all had tons of explosions going off all night.
My ears are still ringing.
Your ears are still ringing. Yeah, the animals were having a big time. A neighborhood did a great job with a lot of the big stuff and up in the sky. And so it was nice. I could just kind of sit in the backyard and enjoy it. Kind of hard to beat a little fireworks display that you don't have to pay for.
Exactly. That's pretty easy. Today at supertalk.tv, you will see the newest plant that I have acquired, which is an old plant, but I just didn't happen to have one. Y'all know I love the clerodendron family. Even though Cashmere Bouquet is one of those plants that will run through your yard and be an extreme bully at times, even though Glory Bower is one of those things that smells great for a day and then kind of doesn't, you know, it's still a wonderful, wonderful family. And this particular one that you'll see today is white flowers with red centers. It's called Clerodendron Bleeding Heart. And I think it's one of the prettiest. It climbs, but it's not aggressive. And it's just a plant that if you have a space for it, I think everybody ought to have one hanging, either in a hanging pot or in a container with a small trellis in it. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant. One of the things that I'm most fond of in that family. Just hadn't had one in a long time. There's so much going on. I don't know if anybody else but me will want to celebrate, but today is Mechanical Pencil Day.
I love a mechanical pencil now.
I just love mechanical pencils. Yes. There's people out there going, I better get another cup of coffee. Now they're going to talk about pencils.
Well, the yellow one that looks like a pencil is the only one I ever really like to use.
You know,
the number
fun.
Two,
sure.
And you spin the little head on it, buy them in like a six pack. I love those things.
Keep those things.
When you do math, you know, for so long, you just sit there scribbling stuff down and you get used to not using pens.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. When you're learning to take notes, and you realize that you can't cross out everything as you misspell it. You get to a mechanical pencil pretty quickly, especially with a clipboard and things like taking down data and doing stuff in research. I did not know. I knew there had to be something before, because obviously there was graphite and people had little, I've seen little clips that you would hold the graphite with in order to write, you know, the predecessor to the mechanical pencil. But there was also this other thing that were propelling pencils, because they invented a device that allowed the next step, and it allowed the lead to be shot out of the pencil so you could use it. Now, obviously, we don't think of mechanical pencils as propelling pencils because we hit them and put it out there, but it was just a really funny notion to me. Somebody was so obsessed with this, and this is really what it takes to refine anything. You know, we don't get to glow-in-the-dark petunias overnight. We don't get to mechanical pencils overnight. We have to have several steps in between here and there.
Well, we have a phone call right out of the gate here, and it is Mike in Greenville, and he has a question about daylilies for your garden, Mama.
Wonderful. Good morning, Mike. Thanks for calling today. What's on your mind?
Good morning on such a hot Saturday morning.
Yes, ma'am. Oh.
I want to clean out some beds. I've got some large daylily beds. Can I mow the daylilies down? Will they come back, or do I need to just clean around them?
String trimming would be better, because we don't want to scalp them. As long as you leave the center, as long as you're leaving their clump in the center, they will be able to grow back. But you can also just dig them all up if you prefer to do that. But I wouldn't use a mower unless you have a better mower than I have for that sort of task. If you mow straight over them, it's got to be set real, real high, and you don't want to scalp the center of the clumps. Does that make sense?
So if I mow them, I got to mow them high.
Very high, yes.
Okay.
I've seen it done, but I can also tell you that I have seen it done badly. I've seen it done well, and I've seen it done not so well. So just don't get too low. Don't let the clumps get scraped all the way down to the ground, because it's more difficult for them to come back if they even can.
All right.
I want to see pictures of this, Mike. Send them to me.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Enjoy. I do love a good daylily bunch. That's a fun thing to take care of. Now, the other things you can be doing with daylilies right now is quite simply almost anything. They've finished blooming, so you can certainly clean them up. There are plenty that will lose all of their leaves as soon as they dry up, just a little bit after they flower. But there are others that stay nice and green, so you just need to take out the flower stems. And I would take those out, because I'm not interested in producing seed. Now, if you are somebody who wants to breed daylilies, obviously you're going to let some of them go to seed, so you can just, in about 5 years, see what you got. That's about how long I think it takes from a seed to flower a daylily. But they are beautiful plants, and there's no reason not to enjoy them. I do like the reblooming ones. Probably the classic is Stella d'Oro. It's a very low-growing daylily that you'll see oftentimes in commercial plantings, because it is so reliable and small and will just bloom over and over. But there's some red Stellas and some other things that are in that same group of reblooming daylilies that are worth your consideration too. I have been intrigued this week to take a look at some mulches. I had a question in my email last week about choosing mulch and how do you decide, and I was brought back to Ruth Stout. For those of you who are older than me, you'll remember her. She and her husband, I think his name's Fred, but I could be wrong about that, wrote several books about organic gardening back in the 50s, the 1950s. And the information is still absolutely true, if the writing is a little bit dated, perhaps. She still has a very good voice, though. She will tell you all about the different mulches, and she calls mulch gardening, as she refers to it, gardening everything on a mulch, with a mulch. She considers all of that to be how to garden without having an aching back, because there's not so much digging. This was in the time before we began to make stacked gardens, you know, or the layered gardens where we let everything decompose in place like that. This was a little bit before that, and it was revolutionary to a lot of people to even consider that you might have an area, for example, under a tree where the roots stick out too much and you can't actually garden that well in there, but you can put mulch in and you can plant in the mulch. People had not thought of that as much. Plenty of people had done it because they just didn't rake the leaves out when they fell out of the tree, but no one had put it forward as a method of gardening until Ruth Stout in the 1950s. Interesting stuff. Let's see. I know I've got the text line over here. Let's see what's going on over there. Jason's in Pearl. He says, nematodes for insect control? ? I don't know. I can tell you that nematode control is, generally speaking, done with chitons. But if you'll send me another sentence or two, I might be able to help with that particular one. Let me see if I can figure that one out. I have to think about that. So we're moving from mechanical pencils. By the way, Lance, they were patented in 1822.
A mechanical pencil patented in 1822.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yep.
That's on back right there.
Well, we're not the only ones that liked them.
Yeah, so. I'm a fan. Thank you very much for the inventor. I might have
we
to
appreciate
dig that
it.
One out.
It, like so many things, they take a bunch of people to get it done. Samson Morton and John Hawkins, 1822, the first patent for a refillable pencil that apparently was reliable. I think a lot of other people, whenever they say that in a patent conversation, they're always talking about all the people that submitted them and they blew up or didn't work, you know, or something. But in this case, in 1879, Mr. Hoffman invented the push-button clutch mechanism, which is what we're so familiar with now.
It's got that little, you know, it's got a little wheel in there.
Yep.
And it has the teeth on it. That's pretty high-end for 1800s.
I'm telling you, they were, these guys were thinking. People, one of the things that I realize now is, as I'm in the 21st century, is that all those things that you used to read and hear about, the time changing and all that stuff, I really do think that time, an hour felt longer then, perhaps because of many things, many constraints that were on people. But they did sit around and, you know, learn how to whittle, learn how to make a pencil, learn how to undo that orange with the one piece of rind and the apple and all that sort of thing. So it's just fun. It's just fun to think about. Paula, that's a beautiful, beautiful dandelion. Just lovely.
Hey, I was visiting with a friend and his wife. They had a little cookout the other day and ran out to out from Pelahatchie, which is out from Lodabar, which is out from Crossroads. So that, you know, that gives you an idea.
Oh,
where
good.
You,
see,
yeah,
I know exactly,
exactly
where that is.
Right. Beautiful area. I love it out
there. You're going to take me for a ride,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, man. It's pastoral and wonderful and ponds everywhere. But and they had, you know, cooked a good bit of food and we had a wonderful time. But I was visited with the wife when I pulled up and she was out in the garden and, you know, weeding and pulling and frustrated because she looked at me and she says, I can't get these tomatoes to do anything. They've been looking like this for a month. And, you know, she has a bunch of pretty green ones about the size of a golf ball and maybe a little larger. And it's having the same issue in central Mississippi as a lot of folks seem to be having. Is there anything that, you know, that we need to be paying attention to that's happening here? Because I keep hearing the same story, GM.
Ripening has three or four qualities about it. One of them is quite simply the time involved. So sometimes we're eager for them to turn sooner than they would actually want to turn. And other times, of course, it feels like, especially if we have a whole lot of rain, the tomato will just swell up and even crack sometimes because it ripens so quickly. So there's the time that it takes that particular tomato to ripen, but then there's also the consistency of the water. Just like we talk about blossom end rot being initiated when the flowers actually are on the plant and in that very early formation of the fruit because they just can't take up enough water, we have the same problem in ripening. If there's not any water, or like everything else, if there's too much water, if the plants are sitting with their feet in water, the ripening process is affected. The other problem in ripening are stink bugs, and that's the one I put last because I hate to have anybody even think about it, but they are there, they are out here, and if you're seeing them in your plants, the way that they sting the tomato will affect its ripening and sometimes prevent it from ripening at all. So I would suggest watching for bugs, checking on the watering, And of course, if time has been the problem, you can always go back and look at how long that particular variety takes to ripen, because that information's available out there, you know, in the Google machine, so you can find that out.
Well, that's a great answer, though, because I was trying to explain, but I didn't have near the expertise and professionalism that you just displayed.
Well,
thank you.
I can't do your job.
Yes, I was like, I promise I'm going to ask this Saturday morning, and I will get you an answer.
I cannot do your job, so hopefully you can't do mine, or I'm out.
I can't even try to do your job. So
we have some really good info from our buddy that's all of the upcoming events happening, so I'm going to try and get to some of that this morning. Let's see. Jason, I'm going to have to check this one out, and I'll try and find out for you, but I don't know either. He's driving, so we're gonna talk a little bit later about some of that. Ooh, Lyman Monticello garlic. That is beautiful. Just gorgeous. We were having a conversation the other day about the many ways that we can eat garlic. You know, a lot of people say you should eat garlic. It's good for your health. I like it because it makes food taste better in many, many cases, but it is healthy. I'm not going to wear clothes around my neck. I'm not trying to ward off vampires right now. You know, that's not an issue for me. But I will tell you that roasted garlic is one of the most delicious things in the world, and garlic that you have just baked in oil is also really delicious. They have different applications, of course, when you get to the cooking part of it. But if you feel like you have too much garlic, not to worry. There's plenty you can do with it. And it looks to me like Lyman's going to have all the garlic he and the neighbors need. I think people are so funny. They talk about how, you shouldn't have all that garlic because it's going to, you know, affect your breath. Just make sure everybody eats it. It'll be fine. It'll be just great. I think I should probably tell you that I'm not hearing music, but I expect to shortly. Am I correct? All right.
We will be back. We have a good question from Jim, but I'm going to wait until we get back from the other side of the break because I'm sure that you'll have some. It's a tomato question, you know, as we have.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you, sir. We'll be right back.
Isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match, yeah. But at night, it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer. In the city, in the summer, in the city. Cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But at night it's a different world, go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night, despite the heat it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the night.
Mississippi farmers raise over 800,000 head of cattle each year. We take care of our livestock so you get what's good for your family on your table. We are only one of thousands, but we are united as one to grow the food, fiber, and shelter you need every day. Mississippi needs farmers. The Farm Families of Mississippi.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
Hey, I'm here with Alex Murray of Auto Innovation.
At Auto Innovation, we want to change your car buying experience. When you're in the market for a quality pre-owned vehicle, please come see us. We want to make friends, not just customers. All eligible vehicles are inspected by a Master Tech mechanic and come with a limited powertrain warranty on us. We are located on Highway 51 in Ridgeland. Come by and see us or check out our inventory online at autoinnovation.net. Let us change your car buying experience.
Auto Innovation, Highway 51 in Ridgeland.
Hey, this is Bob. Just walked into ESI Supply. Patrick, man, what's going on with the hard hats?
ANSI has a new rating out, the new Type 2 hard hats, to be able to get on some job sites. And so ESI is really your hard hat headquarters.
From head protection to fall protection to cut protection to fire protection to eye protection, ESI Supply is your protection headquarters. Stop by and see them at 111 Aerosmith Drive in Richland or give them a call at 601-933-4910. That's 601-933-4910 or online at esisupply.net.
It's been said that time waits for no one, but that's not completely true. Hi, I'm Cameron Albright. Since 1920, our family has been privileged to serve as Mississippi's foremost diamond merchant. For decades, generations have trusted Albrightons for engagement rings, anniversaries, and those special events in life. Time has certainly changed our world. The internet, smartphones, and social media have revolutionized how we research, communicate, and even shop. At Albrightons, we've grown with you. At Albrightons.com, you can search, shop, and find the latest in fine jewelry. But for those who prefer the personal experience, you can now shop the all-new Albrightons at 4460 Old Canton Road in Northeast Jackson. With new displays and the latest designer jewelry, we're located across from our old home in Highland Village. Still the same Albrightons service you'd expect, but now bigger and better. You've waited for us, now we're ready for you. Come see what's new. Albrightons, 4460 Old Canton Road in Jackson.
At Albrightons, Albrightons Jewelers.
Family Termite is a proud VIP sponsor of the Handyman Show on Super Talk Mississippi. Whether you're a proud DIYer or a seasoned veteran, Mississippi's handyman Buddy Slowick has the answers to your home improvement questions each Saturday from 10 till noon.
This is Jack Hoffman. For nearly 31 years, Tico's Steakhouse has been a staple for fine dining in Jackson, Mississippi. Dad has long since desired for me to come work alongside him. And now that I'm here, I would like to invite you to come experience our family tradition of our hospitality, sizzling steaks, and healthy pour beverages. Our dining rooms are open and we are taking reservations. Our private rooms are also available along with takeout. Call today or stop in to experience Tico's in the second generation.
Tico's Steakhouse, East County Line Road in Ridgeland, 601-956-1030.
Need to move heavy loads with complete confidence? Trust the experts at Southeastern Services to move your equipment. Reliable, safe, and on-time deliveries every time. Southeastern Services, your trusted partner in heavy haul transportation. Visit us online, give us a call at 601-292-9932.
Yes, indeed. All the harmonica fans in the world are here today. Lyman says that that garlic came from only three shovels full. That's going to be a neighborhood full of garlic. That's beautiful. And they're flawless, y'all. You need to look at them at supertalk.tv because this is what you're aiming for. These are beautiful. They're just perfectly harvested, and they're also flawless looking garlic. That's delightful. Fun. Ooh, how beautiful. One of my very favorite plants, Marty from Tupelo. We were just talking about these last week, the abelias that are in the courtyard at the radio station in Jackson are just showing out. And Marty from Tupelo has one that is magnificent, too. You know, I love that plant because it starts blooming now. It will bloom, you know, a little in June, carry on. But it really, really blooms out in July and even into August if you keep the water coming to it, if you don't happen to have any rain. She wants to know about watering and fertilizer. It's real, real simple. If you will prune it only enough to take whatever's dragging the ground, keep it off the ground, you know, do that in the early spring. That's all you really have to do in terms of pruning, in my experience with it. And the other thing is to fertilize it in early spring with something for flowering shrubs, something that is intended to produce more flowers. If you've got this one in some beautiful garden soil, a bed that's lovely, it's obviously going to have plenty of nitrogen from that as well as what it takes from its mulch. It does need a complete and balanced fertilizer, but you want it to be one that has slightly higher numbers in the phosphorus and potassium category as well as those trace elements. It's a butterfly magnet. It is a beautiful, beautiful plant. Thank you for sending it this morning.
We had a quick question too from Jim and Soso, and he was at, back to the tomato question. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With the suckers, do you pull the suckers at the top, or do you just kind of wait and, you know, see
it,
in the new bush?
Now, people that have never grown tomatoes are going, you mean they have something else I didn't know about? They got blight, they got bugs, they got suckers? What is that? Well, a sucker is a vegetative form. If you've got your stem and you've got your side branches, it forms right there in the crotch of the side branch where it meets the stem. It's just another shoot. It's because the tomato can't help but grow. Okay, they're just, when they're happy, they're really happy. All right, what about suckers? Well, first of all, they give you another photosynthesizing surface, so you will have a little bit more action. You'll get more of the joy that you're supposed to have, unless it takes away from the tomatoes. And in that case, for example, what happens is you'll see that the plant's not doing anything different, but the suckers are about 2 feet tall shooting out of the middle of the plant. Those are the ones you want to take off, maybe even at 1 foot. You want to take those off. But some people say you cannot ever get them to root. They will never be okay. They will not make tomatoes. I know other people that root them every year and make tomatoes off of them. So I don't know of any botanical reason why they wouldn't grow and make flowers and make fruit, but I do know that they're trickier for a lot of folks. So I say leave them on the plant. If you need, first of all, if your plant doesn't have a great deal of leaves on it and you need some shade for the fruit that is forming and ripening, they're really good for that. It's, on the other hand, they will tell you if they're really shooting out at long lengths, they'll tell you that there's too much nitrogen in the situation, so go ahead and take them off and don't fertilize for a little while. So that's really what's happening with suckers. Oh, and if you want to root them, a lot of people just stick them in water to root. I'm not a big fan of that, because I do think that at midsummer, your compost heap needs a little green in addition to the grass cuttings that you're going to put in it, and suckers make a good thing for that. But they're great if you need a little shade on the fruit, and they're really good if you need extra material to make more plants or compost.
Well, and Jim, he called back, and he had another question for you. I'm going to pipe him in right here.
All righty.
All right, Jim, you on.
Okay, good morning, Garden Mama.
You good morning, good Jim. Day. Thank you so much.
Look, these tomato plants, that's what I was asking him about the suckers. I left a few on there,
mm-hmm.
just to help it branch out and make shade and get more sunlight. But on my garlic, I've got it gathered. I've got it strung up. How long should I leave it hanging, and what do I do with it after I take it? When do I take it out, and how do I store it in the house afterwards?
If you have long stems, you braid it, okay? And you do that as soon as it's dry enough to work with without sticking to your hands or sticking to itself. But if you want to just store them, if you're going to cut those stems off, you don't intend to make braids, all you're waiting for is for the material to dry. And at that point, the garlic's ready to be stored. It needs to be stored preferably in the dark, in somewhere that's not too hot. And I'm not in favor of putting it in the refrigerator, but a lot of people do. I don't think that has such a great effect on it. But a basket...
I got them hanging from a string right now, mm-hmm. and they've been out here for about a month.
Well, they should be ready to use.
They're in the shade under the porch.
They should be ready to use by now.
Okay, well, I tried storing some in a little bag one time, like you get oranges in, a small bag,
mm-hmm.
and they turned just as green as they could be and rotted.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see people do a lot of stuff, you know, because we don't have the best drying conditions in this part of the world anyway. But people will put them into an old flat like you bought individual plants in, you know, and just let them sit that way for ages or until you're ready to use them. But other folks will put them into a mesh bag and hang them up. But you got to let them get real dry before you do any of that.
Okay.
So go well, mess with them. Go see how they are.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you for calling. Good to hear from you. I love having some garlic growers. By the way, if you are checking us out at supertalk.tv today, I hope you are. You will see that I am, in fact, not quite sitting in an oak tree, but I'm thinking about sitting in an oak tree. And that's really wonderful. It's a beautiful shot, Lance. Thanks for using it.
Oh, I love it, too. It just... It's got all the green growing on the tree, too.
Very gardenesque.
How does that, with an oak tree like that, I've always fascinated, because I keep that image of that beautiful place that you visited and did the remote there. But that, you get all that. It's not moss, but what is it that grows in those live oaks like that?
It's resurrection fern.
Ah, okay.
It's called resurrection fern because it comes up and is green every time it gets rained on, and then it disappears. Okay. It doesn't disappear, but it dies down, and then it comes back.
It's so pretty. I've seen it all over, especially in the south of Mississippi.
Very much in wherever it has rained recently, mm-hmm. you're more likely to see it, and it does proliferate on live oaks, and there certainly are more of those the closer to the coast we get. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I'm going to tell you how I was a genius once. You ready for this?
You know I am.
When we were filming my dog Skip in Canton, as happens a lot of the time, they bring the producers and, in this case, the whole team. The locations folks take you around and show you what's available, and they pick out where they're going to shoot these things. And they wanted to do, if you've seen the movie, it comes in with an opening shot that goes in over a live oak branch into a house, okay? So they wanted that. They saw it in the spring. It had been raining. It had resurrection fern on it, and they wanted it to have more in the summertime when I was there to do the work to make it green. I hooked up an oscillating sprinkler on very, very low, laid it up there, turned it on, and left it on for a week, and it made just enough resurrection fern for the shot. It looked like springtime.
Wow.
And I mean, it's not that I'm brilliant, but I knew that all it would take is water. And I knew I wasn't going to go up there and sit with a hose. So I had to put something else to work for me. But it turned out beautifully. And when you see the shot, it does not look like there was a sprinkler on it. So
yeah, it's always amazing.
That.
I'm an old movie fan, as most people that listen weekly or daily know. I like a lot of the older stuff because there's not a lot of CGI or, people actually worked and built the set and had a lot of fun doing that.
They actually had to build that swamp.
Yeah, something happened there, It didn't just CGI it. But the CGI stuff is really cool. But I love when you talk about your experience with the movie side and how much work went into keeping or making the set and the scene what was supposed to be and how it was supposed to look. And there's so many people involved with that, and you were one of those, and getting the plants and everything just right and the shots just right and so that no one looks at it and goes, that ain't where, and I know that that's not where you get that. But I love the older movies because there is that, there's so many people, there's a team, an army of folks,
and there's a consistency, and there are people who their entire job is to make sure that we don't get out of the time frame.
Yeah, you were explaining that to me once, how hard is that to do, like every little bitty thing that goes into
it. It can be tricky.
Yeah, I bet it is. Yeah, just
that's why we watch movies, to look for the mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
I do.
We all do that. You caught me.
We all do that. Beautiful flowers this morning. This is all. Who is this, Greg? Yeah, this is all Greg, and this is so good. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I wonder how did those purple romas taste? That was a pretty
tomato. Ooh, yeah, that I wanted to know about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some gorgeous, gorgeous plants in here today.
But Lyman's on a roll today. I mean,
Lyman's
the garlic,
really got it
he's
going
got
on.
The resurrection stuff in the trees.
Resurrection fern, and now he's got this ancient fern in the south.
Ocean Springs, yeah, that's a beauty.
350 years old, they say.
Living in God's country, too, if you're in Ocean Springs.
I wouldn't doubt that. Paula sent some beautiful pictures from Baptist Hospital. It is a well-placed border bed. And when we talk about stepping up, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about a low plant and then one that's slightly higher and then one that's slightly higher up than that in that it's taller, but it's also on a slightly raised bed piece. And that's how come you can have sometimes it takes that to create drainage in a wide bed. This looks like it's about 10 feet wide and who knows how long. But with caladiums and begonias, and I'm going to say, I don't know what the third plant is, I won't guess. But at any rate, the way that they're stacked, is it's not simply the height of the plant, it's also the fact that this back bed is raised just a little bit, and then the one behind that's raised just a little bit more, which is not quite terracing, but almost. And it really does make a difference in how things turn out. I like that.
I had a long conversation with Peaches Patrick the other day about that. It was just kind of picking his brain on,
mm-hmm.
How do you make all that
He's
come
good.
Together? Yeah, the layering and the you know, how, and, you know, it was really a fun conversation because I was always under the assumption that you did it this way. You know, that it was kind of in a linear mindset and small up front, middle and tall. And he's like, no. You know, he kind of went into detail about, well, you want to kind of swerve it through and make different type of patterns and so that the coverage. And I was like, okay, well, you know, it made total sense. And that's why you bring people like you and Mark Peaches Patrick in. The experts.
Well, he's one of those people that, and I hope he's not listening because it will swell his head to hear me say this, but he's one of those people that can look at four plants and know how they will look in a container together in 3 months, and that's a real challenge. So if you can design something today, but it may look like a fruit bowl. You know what I mean? Yes. It's going to be static, and you can't do that with containers. That's why he's so good at what he does.
Well, and like that picture that Paula sent with the Baptist Hospital curb, you know, appeal there. It is beautiful. And that is what I always thought of it that way, kind of like one layer and then a line and a line and a line. Mm-hmm. And Mark said, you know, you can do that. Yeah, and you can also get real creative and, you know, get almost kind of swerve and meander through that same.
Well, it's like anything else. Yeah. It's like music. Once you know what a three-part chord is, you can do a whole lot of things.
Right.
But you got to get a basic.
There you go.
You know, containers, for example, as well as flower arrangements, basically have something that goes up, something that goes down, and something that's in the middle. That is to say, something tall to draw your eye, something long to keep your attention, and the stuff in the middle really to kind of wow you a bit. So there's lots of different ways to look at it, but containers have that other factor. You got to know what it's going to look like in 3 months.
Yeah. How big will that, like the hibiscus that I planted, and I put them in a nice squared you know, container, probably I could put a bag and a half of the LSU Tiger, you know, dirt in there. And
it the probably, grow mix.
Yeah, the grow mix. I love that stuff.
It's good.
Yeah, I always think of you, too. And
thanks to our friends in Brookhaven.
Now, will that hibiscus...
Phillips Bart does that.
Yeah, will that hibiscus stay in that pot and grow okay, or will I need to move it into something
bigger
later?
No, it's going to be fine. Okay. You'll be able to keep it in that for at least 2 years, but you will have to protect it in the winter time.
I will, yeah, that's why I did it in that, and also the little wheeled...
Yeah,
deal you can those. Yeah, so I, you know, I'm not, I think I'll be able to move them pretty well, and that's one of my goal was to really, you know, be able to do what you said is don't leave them out there in the winter. Yeah. Protect them, but they'll be okay in that size pot for a couple of years, and as they grow should, you know, I could pop them out and put them somewhere else. Yeah, right.
I would think so. Betty in Hattiesburg has sent us a beautiful picture. I think it's a Zebrina, but I'm not sure. If you know what it is, Betty, let me know. Oh my goodness. It's one of my very, very favorite love songs, y'all.
Yeah.
Stick around. We'll be back.
Hey there, homeowners! Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Propane has many business applications: residential construction, commercial construction, agricultural and landscaping, transportation, material handling, and power generation. To learn more about propane and its usage, visit mspropane.com. Energy for everyone. Propane, that's mspropane.com.
Think for a moment about...
Steer it up, little darling, steer it up.
So much to do, so much to consider, so much to think about. I love this question. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Who was this? This is, oh, it's Greg. I thought that might be Greg. Your zinnias were so pretty, they caught me off guard. What's the most important aspects to consider when designing a greenhouse for year-round vegetables? The space has limited light. Okay, the first thing to consider is the limited light. If that's the only spot where you can put it, you need to design it with supplemental lighting. If the shade from the trees around it is what's causing the problem, you may not need as much supplemental lighting as if this is in a space that just happens to be shaded by, say, a building, you know, across the street or something. So if you have less than half a day of sun on the site, the greenhouse is not going to operate well without supplemental lighting. But you can do that. You can install that just as you go. You can. There's every sort of grow light fixture to do that with. Don't forget that the simplest is a 4-foot shop light with one cool white and one daylight bulb in it. Those are that provides the complete spectrum, which is what you're trying to do for plants. But these days there are LED lights, arrays, there are all sorts of choices, but you're going to need some supplemental light. All of that implies a timer and obviously electricity or a solar panel that's going to run all of this for you. So you have to think about that. The other thing that you need to realize if you're going to grow vegetables year-round is that some of them are going to want to be grown in the ground in the greenhouse because you want to protect the top of the plant. I understand that, but there's some things that are never going to do as well in a big container as they will do in a big in the soil itself. So you're going to want to build some beds inside of that greenhouse. What I'm thinking about really depends on what you want to grow, but when I think of things like persimmon trees, I'm not going to tell you to grow that in a container. It's a big, big plant. It can be grown indoors if you have a high enough ceiling. On the other hand, if you're growing figs and pineapple, guava, and satsumas, those are all plants that are going to be at the very most 8 or 9 feet tall, and you can grow those in big containers inside there, or you can grow them in a bed in that greenhouse. So you want to consider how you're going to grow things when you put them there. Obviously, you've got to have access to water, and frankly, shade. I know you say that it's not in full sun, but in the summertime, you will be advantaged by having a little bit of shade. Particularly, for example, we're just about ready to start vegetables for the fall garden. When we do that, it's really helpful to have just a little bit of shade to keep them from being quite as damaged as they might be in a traditional greenhouse. It would just be too hot, so you can have some shade for that. Ventilation, shade, and working on the light situation and beyond the water. Those are all things that once you set them up, they're there for the rest of time, and that greenhouse will give you great joy, and I guarantee you that you'll like it. I promise, once you get it set and going, you're going to love it. It's a fun environment, and it's also something that grows plants really, really well. You have more control. You can protect them. You can water them when they need water, not just when the sky opens up. But you can also shelter them a little bit more from the vagaries of the season. You can extend your seasons a little bit by using that cover. So I'm for it. I like it. Good ideas. Now I got to tell you this. There's so many things in this world that are so funny. Today is bikini day. Been a long time since I even considered that myself. I'm sort of pale and worry about skin problems. But at any rate, Louis Riard in Paris did not mind all of this. 1946, I presume they were celebrating or they had run out of fabric or something. But the bikini atoll is what inspired the name of the bikini.
Okay.
Even though at that time the U.S. military was in fact conducting atomic bomb tests on that place, I guess it was that's why it was in the news, why it was written about at that time. And he wanted to do something outrageous, and he named it the bikini. Do you know what separates the bikini from a two-piece bathing suit?
Not really.
You can see your navel.
Oh, okay. Well, did he invent the male Speedo too, or?
I don't think so.
Yeah, good. I was going to say, man, I'm going to.
I think that was the remainder of the people who, you know, had bigger ideas.
But, yeah, I was going to say, I'm not going to be as big a fan of him if he invented the Speedo.
I don't believe he did. I think he was a women's designer and mostly for underwear, apparently. Mm-hmm. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. I think it is funny, though, that we have movies named after bikinis. I mean, you know, it's just one of those phenomenons in the culture that has never lost its allure, as they say, for people. Coming up in our next hour today, I've got some pretty interesting information to you and some affirming information about why we want to encourage and how to encourage pollinators around our gardens. And some of the ways that things can actually pay off and be a beautiful, beautiful opportunity for all of us to get along. I've also got information, and I don't know why this is, but it hadn't happened before, so I thought I should mention it. The three top stories in horticulture, garden-related science all came to me today from Australian universities. I guess it's the middle of the winter there, and they're having meetings so they can read papers to each other. I don't know why that is, but here we are. So that's going to be fun. I have some really good questions in the Garden Mama group on Facebook. One from a person that has a question a lot of us have, and that is, how do we get rid of basket grass? If you don't know what basket grass is, consider yourself lucky. It's one of those things that grows flat on the surface, comes out around the time of dayflower, after spiderwort, but it's a very, very thin leaf, and it will run everywhere. It is, in fact, I think it's oplismus, but we know it as basket grass because it looks as if you could weave baskets out of it. It's very pretty. It does, however, cover the ground and run over everything, and it can be difficult to get rid of if you don't pull it out as you see it. It will get entrenched. And so the best way, apparently, is to pull it out, plant something else there immediately so that it can't start again, or pull it out and immediately suppress the area with something like solarization if you can possibly do that. Some people will say put a rock on top of it. I don't really agree with that because then you got to deal with having a rock in the middle of your flower bed, but it is one of those plants that you would like to stop. It is, while not technically invasive in most places, it is pesky and troublesome. So I would say take care of that and do that. Do that for yourself. You'll be glad that you did. You'll be real glad that you did, in fact. The other piece of that information about tomatoes I wanted to get to you this hour before I forget about it, when they split, they are not inedible. So I do advise that just like you go out and pick flowers right before it's going to rain, that you pick tomatoes if you know it's going to be raining for an entire day, go ahead and pick. They will ripen or continue to ripen indoors. But you need to understand that that split does not render it inedible. A lot of people say that they only make sauce out of the ones that split. Well, okay, but you're also getting a slightly watery tomato because the reason it splits is because it took up water faster than it could handle it. So be aware of that. We'll answer some more questions from the Garden Mama group. Take your texts and all your phone calls here on the Garden Mama Show. Stick around.
We have one voice, the voice of agriculture. We have one job, growing the products you need every day. We have one mission, fighting for agriculture and rural Mississippi. We have you in mind, caring for your private property rights. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
When guys like me separate from the military, We tried to move forward. But to truly move forward, we need to take care of our bodies and our minds. I finally understood that after I went to VA. I saw the difference it made to have providers who understood what I've been through and know how to help. I'm getting the highest quality health care at the lowest cost. And I'm telling every veteran I know that taking care of yourself is the strongest thing you can do. Get what you've earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between. Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal on Super Talk Mississippi.
Ah, the questions you can ask. My goodness. There's questions that you don't think people should ask, but they do. That's the world of gardening, isn't it? This is a good question. How do you get a bulb that nobody else has? For example, Crocosmia lucifer. Now, if you've got Crocosmia and you're trying to get rid of it, well, this is not for you. But lucifer is one that is not in particularly aggressive. It has beautiful bright red flowers as opposed to the orange flowers of the more common one. And I'm going to say that unless you run into the bulbs in a rack someplace, that's something that you probably need to get either at a plant swap or, frankly, order it. And if you have a choice, if you get somewhere and there's a bunch of Crocosmias, make sure that you're getting the one that you want, because lucifer is a very specific named variety because of that color. When is a good time to move a Peggy Martin, a rose? Well, ideally winter, but we don't always get a chance to do that in winter. So I probably ought to put together some tips on if you got to move it now kind of thing. It's really a matter of preparing the soil, pruning the plant that you're moving, and then making sure that you keep water coming to it on a regular basis, even using something, either a manure tea, a compost tea, worm castings tea, something that's going to help those roots really get going. Root stimulator's okay, but it's not as good as the others. And it's just something else to consider. So those are some questions coming in the Garden Mama group today on Facebook. We don't really bring in more people because the people that are there tend to bring in people, but we're working on that. We'll get that to you another day. What are your favorite red, white, and blue flowers? That's another really good question. We'll talk about that this morning. Maybe you've got some suggestions for me. You can send them in on the text line. Corinne's in Jackson. She heard that I love this. It's time to plant pumpkin seeds. And in case you didn't know that, it's time, like now, today, if you want them for Halloween. So she says that she's heard to make a hill of soil and to plant 3 seeds in each mound and then later choose the best seedling. Do I agree with that? Full sun, I guess, yes. You definitely need full sun for pumpkins. The other thing that you absolutely need for pumpkins is a reservoir. And the easiest way to make one of those would be if you had one of the big coffee cans that are barely around anywhere anymore. So I'm going to suggest a 1-gallon jug. You take poke some holes around the base of it and keep the cap on it so you can keep it closed up. Put it, bury that halfway into the soil next to where you're building the hill. You want it to be able to water almost constantly. You want to be able to come along and just put water and fertilizer into that reservoir so that it goes directly to that pumpkin. So yeah, you need a space. Ideally, you need a space that's 6x6, something like that, because this is so much vinage. But as I've said before, you oftentimes will see the pumpkin planted in the flower bed and the vine just trailing across the lawn, which is not, I don't have any problem with that. It makes it hard to mow the lawn. But if you're willing to do that, then that's perfectly easy. 3 seeds, I'm probably going to plant 5. And the reason I'm going to do that is just because they may not all come up. Don't crowd them together, but put them around the top of that hill, and then you're going to leave 2 and let one go one direction, one go the other. Varieties. You know, there's a lot of varieties of pumpkins, and they will all grow well here, even if they have names like Connecticut something or another. You know, there's some pretty prosaically named pumpkins. But it does depend. Read your labels, read your seed packs, because some take 120 days, some take 90 days. You want one that's going to fit into the potential for the time that you're doing it. That's really all I would have to say about that. Roma tomatoes don't ripen on the windowsill like other tomatoes. Well, Andy, I have a suggestion for you. Get a brown paper sack and put them in it. Believe it or not, that's generally speaking what encourages them. Put them under the sink, for example, or in a closet, you know, somewhere in your house. Don't ignore them entirely, but let them alone for about a week and then come back and see if some of the color hasn't developed. That usually works out pretty well. Lance, I got to tell you, I wanted to celebrate this particular day that's happening today, but it turns out I'm not celebrating the right thing.
Okay.
There was a big cereal and grain movement in the United States in the very early early 20th century. Kellogg's, you know, they got into it, all those people. Well, Reverend Graham, I don't believe this is Billy Graham's relative, but it doesn't tell me it isn't, so if you want, I just don't know, but I don't believe Billy Graham was a Presbyterian, and this reverend was one of those people that believed that vegetarian eating lifestyle was the only way to go, and that basically if you were having any fun around food at all, there was something morally wrong with you. Now, that's a judgment call that I'm making, but I'm telling you, there were a bunch of those folks that wanted you to be healthy, but only if you were also miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't enjoy anything.
No. Spas that were not spas like we know today. Spas where they would put you in solutions of things to do stuff to your body that apparently never worked, or we'd still be doing it. But at any rate, the Reverend believed that a bland vegetarian diet based on graham flour, and this is what I thought was so interesting. I didn't realize that graham flour is coarsely ground whole wheat. That's all that is.
Really? Okay.
Well, that tells you how bland that was going to taste.
Yeah, wheat. Yeah, straight up.
He believed that it could promote spiritual purity, and shall we say that your lesser urges would be suppressed.
Yeah, as long as you're very Spartan in this
very
world.
Very Spartan.
Yeah,
you're good. Somebody, fortunately, along the way, took those things, put a little honey in, did this and that to them, some cinnamon, and we have graham crackers that I enjoy very much today. Yeah. But you would not have gotten anybody to eat this original graham cracker, even as a s'more with a marshmallow on it, because it was, well, first of all, that probably would have been sinful, considered in his church. But now we do them a little bit differently. We started in like the 1950s to begin to use that coarse graham flour and turn it into things like, you know, pie crusts and delicious sweet treats. So it's graham cracker day, and how would we know that if we didn't have an opportunity?
Well, and you know, you always have that shredded wheat. You can pull out the old Post brand shredded wheat with nothing on it. It's you've got to dial it up real good for it to have any flavor.
Yeah.
The milk is the flavor to that deal. But they eventually came out with a frosted kind. You know?
In my, which I still don't like, but in my most serious and most limited food eras, and I know you don't think I eat anything now, so we'll have that conversation another day. But in my most limited, most restricted food times, I was definitely that person. I was, don't put anything else on there.
Right. Just go straight and bland and no flavor and no fun.
Exactly. No fun, no flavor. But anyway, I am going to pull the wool over the Reverend's eyes and tell you that if they bring me a graham cracker without any goodness in it, I'm done. There's no question.
Well, that Seinfeld cereal movie is really good. What is it called? Unfrosted.
I was so surprised that I thought it was funny, and I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one,
too. I was
very
surprised.
Yeah, and it actually had some interesting historical context in there, you know, kind of thrown around comedically. But I found that movie to be
really...
For those
of y'all, it's the story of the invention of Pop-Tarts.
Yes.
And what essentially, according to this story, it was basically just another way to make profit, you know.
Well,
there's a certain joy in having a tart, but, you know.
Well, they were all kind of, everybody was trying to figure out how we could do something other than cereal.
Yes.
And so the Pop-Tart, the pastry, the stuffed pastry. And it was one of the funny things is like, all right, so we've got all these flavors like strawberry, grape, and there was another couple.
Oh,
and Jerry
gosh.
Seinfeld says, it's all the same flavor. It just, we just name
color.
It something
yeah,
different.
Name yeah. it something different. Well, I'm going to tell you that for those of you who like Amy Schumer and for those of you who don't.
Oh, she was something
you need
in that
to watch her portray Marjorie Post. Mm-hmm. She is hysterically funny and perfectly on point for everything from the Jackie Kennedy pillbox hat to the suits to the, you know, I mean, oh, she was just delightful. And, of course, she did not win the day. Kellogg's ended up with the Pop-Tart, but she made a good case.
Well, and you have McCarthy in there, too. She's hilarious.
Yeah, she's hilarious.
And Max Greenfield is in it also. He is
so
Rick
funny.
Ludwig. He always plays that kind of quirky, you know, very
extremely
neurotic.
Extremely quirky very, in this one.
And he's awesome. James Marsden in it is Jack Lane. He's
oh,
so funny.
Yeah. I forgot so about that.
The cast is absolutely top notch. And then don't forget
movie.
About Edsel Kellogg III, and that's Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah.
He was Amy Schumer's opposite as she's Marjorie Post.
He was absolutely brilliant in this. And some of the fun really is that ensemble acting always produces a funnier show.
Yeah.
And they played off of each other.
Well,
very,
and I love the way
well.
They brought the children in, the kids. You know, and that was like, you know, hey, we don't know anything. Let's bring these little rugrats in.
That's
They're
right.
digging around
so,
in the garbage figuring everything out.
So. And they truly did. July is cacti month. I did
Ooh.
Not know that, but I can see why it would be.
Perfect conditions.
Perfect conditions for all of that. For those of you who are traveling in the world where large cacti are, don't forget we have a native one in the southeast, and that's prickly pear. It's a beautiful cactus, and in fact, this is when they begin. You're driving along. You might be in the Delta in Mississippi, for example, and you ride along and you realize there's this cactus as big as the house behind it. And it literally has paddles for hands. You know, the cactus is fully paddles, and the flowers are yellow, and you want to stop and go look at them. It's probably okay to do that. You know, I always tell you, make sure you know where you're tromping into. But most of the time, those cactus plants are so close to the road that no one's going to complain if you go over to look at it. And they are beautiful. They're not easy to grow, but they're not impossible either. If you like them, you should grow them. Because it is a native plant. It's like it belongs to me in the same planting area, and I'm not a designer, but it belongs in the same planting area with Adam's needle, because to me the paddles of the cactus and the spikes of Adam's needle yucca are just really beautiful together, and they're very bold and make a very strong statement. So if you're looking to draw attention, it's a good pair of plants to do it with. No question about
my first time to Mexico. Went down like with a church mission group, and it was I think it was 19, and we went out and built this building. We were actually putting the roof on it from the year before, and the wind was like 50 miles an hour all the time, and you're in this desert kind of setting, and you're just covered with this silt all the time. But at the end of the week of doing that, they put together a meal for us. And everything was harvested locally. It was like, mm-hmm. you know, fish out of the lagoon and goat that they had barbecued in the ground and tinfoil. Just all they did was remove the innards, you know, and it still had its eyes. That thing would be eyeballing you while you were eating it. And it was delicious. But the cactus, you know, and they had de-spined it and cut it very much like a julienne green bean. And it was very good. I was surprised. I really didn't know what I was getting into, but I was kind of blown away at, you know, cactus cooked the right way. Yeah.
It's a very, very succulent and almost sweet vegetable. It just has a quality to it that you would not expect.
Man, it worked really well with that greasy, awesome goat, and there was some kind of little fish stew or something. It was really good, but I'd never had it since then. And I've always wondered if anyone, you know, here in the States actually prepares cactus that way.
People do that. Absolutely. There's no question but that there's somebody that eats just about everything in our
apparently
part of the
you
world.
Can. You just no gotta question. get those points off of it. It'd be like trying to eat a porcupine without
Well, you know. It's one of those things that when it shows up in a basket, for example, at a cooking competition, the question is, how long am I going to have to spend on this?
It's
like having to shuck oysters, you know, before you can cook them. You're going to be there a while. I was real happy. Peaches sent us some Natural Science Museum information going on, and also a landscape checklist from our friends at the Cooperative Extension. I was really appreciating that one of the tips is watch for garden pests and diseases. That's a good thing. That's the first step in integrated pest management, in case you didn't happen to already know that. But the thing about integrated pest management is that we do it every day. We've just put together this discipline to explain it. And when people start to ask me questions like, okay, you used to say organic, now you say sustainable, what's it? It's all a matter of conscious gardening. And it's really a matter of gardening with the forces that are in the yard as opposed to against most of them. And for that reason, I think it's important for us to talk about integrated pest management very often, really, as often as possible. If we are monitoring, if we are watching for them, as the note from the Extension Service says, paying attention to who's out there. And as I said, if you've got a problem, look around and see who's there. Sometimes it's the stink bugs. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a different issue. But if it is a bug, you need to know about that, too. The cultivating methods, though, I wanted to tell you, we always talk about leaving that patch for the pollinators out in the field, and also so that the beneficial insects have somewhere to be around your garden. We give it that. Well, we now have research from Western Australia's biggest university, Curtin. They are studying the preservation of native strips in avocado orchards, and the yields are better, the pests are fewer. And quite frankly, what could be wrong with that? Absolutely nothing. This whole business of encouraging botanical diversity, of course, is what I've talked to you about for so long, keeping the insects on your GPS so they know where you are, so that then when the avocados need pollinating, maybe there's not enough blossoms, you know, for everything, but there are pollinators to move the pollen if they have somewhere to live, because they wouldn't necessarily just be attracted to those flowers on the avocados. Insect communities and avocado orchards that are adjacent to what they call native remnant vegetation, that is to say, just the things that come up and grow, think goldenrod for us, think ageratums, you know, think ironweed, those kinds of things. These were visited more than twice as many times as pristine field areas. Now, come on. You come by twice as often, you're probably going to pollinate at least as much, if not more, than you could have before, and you will have more pollinators because there's more food sources for them. So I really appreciate the folks at Curtin making it easy for me to tell you it makes sense to monitor, it makes sense to pay attention, it makes sense to control as little as necessary. These are all wonderful bits and pieces of integrated pest management. We will be right back.
I'm a friend of thunder. Friend, is it any wonder lightning strikes me? I've fought with the devil, got down on his level, but I never gave in, so he gave up on me. I'm no stranger to the rain. I can spot bad weather, and I'm good at finding shelter in a downpour. I've been sacrificed by brothers.
We are advocacy, a century of wins, protecting private property rights, advancing technology, sustaining our land, conserving our natural resources, all to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
I'm here at the show. Mama told me
not to come.
Mama told me not to come.
That ain't no way to have fun. A son. That ain't no way to have fun.
Oh, that's what she said. She said.
That ain't no way to have fun.
No.
That ain't
do love a good laugh, huh?
Love it.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Well, I don't know where the picture is. I've got a question to identify a small lily, but I don't have it. I'm sorry. You'll have to send the picture again because it didn't get to me. But I'm going to guess that it is one of the rain lilies because small pink lilies at this time of the year tend to be, I think there's a Frantes, but they're sometimes called hurricane lilies and they're sometimes called rain lilies. It just depends on which one. So they're nice, though. They're beautiful little flowers, and one that if it rains a whole lot, like as it did this year, for example, I have some things like that that pop up that didn't use, don't come up every year. It takes a lot of rain to get them to move. So I like that a lot. Talking about things about the whole Crocosmia question, as soon as I said that out loud, I got immediately two texts and one email from somebody else who's different people saying to me, don't tell anybody to plant those things. They're horrible. Well, they're not horrible at all. They're actually quite popular in many places, but they do tend to rip through the bed. So if you can give them their own space, it's like cashmere bouquet. You might want to plant those two things together, cashmere bouquet and Crocosmia, in an isolated part of your garden and let them duke it out because they are both pretty aggressive. And they are beautiful, though, and they're both pretty decent cut flowers and something that you might want to consider just having because you don't have to do anything to it except cut it down after it finishes. So something to think about. Just a little bit different attitude maybe on my part. I have been questioned also this week about taking care of live oak trees, and it was before we even had this beautiful one in my background today. Live oaks are no different than other oaks, except that they can have a longer life. And so therefore, because of the way their branches form, sometimes those branches at the lower part, they are a more spreading oak tree than other varieties, other cultivars, in that group. So you probably do have to consider as much the space. It's like a catalpa tree. You've got to have a lot of space for a tree that can be as big as this thing is. But you also have to look as you go through the younger part of that tree how you're pruning it. Because if you're not pruning those younger, lower branches to strengthen them, you miss out on some of the most beautiful part of that tree. I feel the same way about Magnolia grandiflora. I really love the wide reach of those, you know, and the big branches that they have. But I recognize that if you don't do that when it's getting pruned, you don't end up with those at later on. You end up with weaker and, frankly, not as supportive branches. You'll see sometimes people go in and cut off all the lower branches of something like a live oak. It not only is dangerous in terms of weakening the tree, but it's so aesthetically unattractive. Speaking of unattractive, we've been looking at some really very, very lovely trees, but the question is, can you deadhead crepe myrtles? There's a lot of them this year that have bloomed out very, very quickly. And I think I can't remember where I was exactly, but somebody said, I have one of those pole pruners, you know, that you can extend the pole up. And he wanted to take off the flowers so he would get more. That's great. If you can still reach those, that's a wonderful thing to do. But they will make more flowers without that process in most of the case, especially the more modern varieties. I wish I could tell you what I'm looking at. Sure is a cute cat, but I have no idea what the story is. Oh,
he's
my
goodness.
He's
in a good spot. You know, whenever you see the carpet little tower, that's usually a good
perch They usually like to be there. I just want to know what he's looking at.
Yeah, something down there
on
the ground.
Is he looking at me? What's he looking at?
A little mouse,
maybe. I don't mean to be mean. I just think it's funny. Oh, my goodness. Well, some other things that are going on in our world today, and I hesitate to say this because now we'll start talking about food that we really wish we could eat as opposed to graham crackers. Today is National Apple Turnover Day, and I'm ready to argue with you because I think apples are the best ones. There are other people that have other favorites, cherry or whatever other turnovers, but apple turnovers to me are set the bar.
Oh yeah, my memo. They called them tarts, and she had she diced the apples and made the syrup and had the dough, and I guess it was mostly biscuit dough back then, and she'd just open it up, make a little, big circle, pour all the stuff in, and then use her fingernails, to seam it up. And man, I ate those things. And
Did she fry them or bake them?
She fried them, yeah. Yeah.
Well, see, fried pies are fried is different. That's more like empanada world. But I like them. Well,
hers were soft though. She didn't cook them until they got crunchy.
Oh, okay.
She let them just get just enough to where they would kind of cure up and hold together. And you would eat those things and be like, oh, where? And then she'd just keep bringing them one after another. You want another one, bud? Yes, ma'am. Give me another
one. Thank you very much.
Yes, please. There's a place in North Mississippi though that makes them just like she did. And when I lived up there in Oxford, I had a little ritual where I'd go by about once a month and buy about five of them,
And, dangerous.
A lady from out in the county had made them, and I think she was fairly elderly. And I said, I need to get to know her. And then COVID hit.
And then you need to learn how to make
That's what I was. That was one of the ones I never really, Mamma never taught me that one. I wish I would have learned the skill set on the tart because it is
that's
wonderful.
That's me and thin dumplings. People who like puffy dumplings are not. That's not my world. I grew up with the thin kind, and it's hard to make. But then I can't make pie crust either, so I'm useless.
She was the best dumpling maker ever. We've always talked about that over the years. Mom, my sister, my dad. Now it's just how amazing those dumplings were. And she would always use the dark meat chicken for the dumplings and a biscuit dough. And she didn't have them real
whole
thick.
Whole other world.
Yeah.
That's another festival we don't have. We could have the chicken and dumplings festival.
Yeah, I'm in. Yeah,
there's at least 15 or 20 different sorts, But I have a question for you. Do you have nightmares? I think everybody has nightmares at some point in their life. I didn't realize there were people who have nightmares all the time. The folks at Frontiers Institute of Technology in Melbourne are letting us know that, unlike apple turnovers, cheese can actually give you nightmares. I had no idea. They surveyed 1,000 students, and they discovered that a certain percentage of them don't even know it, but they are, in fact, lactose intolerant. That is to say, they can't digest cheese. So the midnight... It may not be the beer. It may be the cheese at midnight for these college students that are causing them to have bad dreams. Obviously, if you just quit eating the cheese, but who's going to not eat pizza after the bar closes? I mean, come on. I can remember doing that. I would do it today if I was awake at that hour. A different question entirely. Why would you study this, though? I'm so amazed at the things that we study. Somebody somewhere was disturbed about it enough that they felt like they needed to know. They needed to have an answer to something. Pretty funny.
We got Paula sending biscuits.
Oh,
flaky, beautiful biscuits, too.
I'm telling you.
She says, speaking of food, I finally learned how to make biscuits. My neighbor taught me.
We appreciate her neighbor.
Good work, neighbor.
Oh, my goodness. Luna moth pupae. That's pretty, too. Wow, that's really something. There's a video going around of the sped up process of the formation of the chrysalis, and from when the monarch pupae begins to do that. It's amazing to me. That's a mighty good looking biscuit, Paula.
Yeah.
I need to see that Mayha jelly. I'm ready.
Exactly.
I'm ready. Ah, Sun Gold cherry tomatoes produce so many tomatoes. Yes, how often, we talked about this before, about fertilizing the baby pumpkins that are growing up a trellis. Really, the main thing is to have that reservoir with it because you need them to have water and fertilizer every single day to get the most out of those pumpkins, even the little ones on a trellis. You may not mix full-strength fertilizer after a few weeks, but you definitely need to kick them off with it. I like that. Sun Gold cherry tomatoes are also one on my list, in part because they do make branches of tomatoes as fruits as long as your arm. I mean, they're magnificent. But I love this. This is such a great, great tip. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it. Cut them in half and dehydrate them. skin side down for about 15 hours, and they become little crispy nuggets like that you put in salads and stuff forever after that. Store in the refrigerator. Make them into a powder. Thicken stuff with it. I love that. It's such a great idea. Just a great idea. I've never had enough to do that, but I think it certainly should happen. Yes. Okay. Yes, let me just tell you, Ray and Gluckstadt, you need to check with the folks at the Tupelo Farmers Depot. The farmers market in Tupelo is where Velma was, and that's they're there. You won't have any problem finding them. Thank you for asking. I just had some of their honey yesterday. It was great. See, the things we know. The things we know. That's fun. Ooh, basket grass. Yeah, this is one of those things where if you use one of the corn gluten products, for example, to try and suppress basket grass or any other creeping, crawling thing in your flower bed, you might use that thinking, well, this is less toxic, and it is, than Roundup or something like that, but it's also going to be just as broad spectrum. That is to say, anything that it gets on, it's going to do something to. So I'm going to suggest that this is where you need to learn how to paint. And that is to say, if you're using spruce, if you're using another corn gluten product, or if you're using a Roundup or anything else, when you apply it just to the plant that you want to control, it doesn't get on the other things like spray drift can do. So don't spray, paint. And I think you'll find you have a much better response from your plants.
What is the name of the beautiful red flower that looks like a big ball of red meat? making me hungry. What is this? Does it taste like strawberry meat or something?
That is a celosia. It's we call it brain, but it's because of the way that it looks like. But it's just one of those. You'll see some that are this sort. You'll see some that are plumed, and it's a wonderful flower for the summertime. It's one that we can grow, plant three or four times during the summer, and have flowers all the way till October.
It's absolutely beautiful. I don't know if I've ever seen one of those in person. How big is that head?
Well,
in
this color, usually you'll see purple ones, okay. But you won't see the salmon color. That's one reason why I like this one.
It's so pretty.
They're at least as big as a softball.
Okay, it looked like about a softball. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes a little bit bigger. Just depends on the plant too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the plant's got 15 on it, they're going to be a little smaller. But talk about a great cut flower. I mean, you can keep that one for days, if not weeks. In just a vase that you change the water out of every now and then.
And what was the name of that again?
Celosia. Celosia.
Yeah, thank you.
Certainly. This is not a spelling contest, but if you don't know how to spell it, it can be very distressing.
Right.
Yes. My goodness. Things that are different. Things that are different one place from the other. I'm keeping I'm starting an ongoing process of what one product does that another one doesn't do. That's something we've been using, for example, chlorothalonil fungicide in this country forever. And we've got, we've always had differences in the products that we use than the ones that are approved by the EU. We've had quite a few changes in our world because of them, and they've made some restrictions that we don't agree with. But university in Sydney is letting us know that they also use chlorothalonil as well as the Americans do, but it's a fungicide, and so the effect that they're concerned about is that it increases the likelihood that beneficial insects, any a number of other things, will be affected by it in ways that we did not understand previously. So it's something to think about. We'll talk about fungicides and one thing and another over the next few weeks as I explore some of these things. But please don't go anywhere. We're going to talk a little bit more here on the Garden Mama Show.
Holy little bat face girl. All along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, and Betty, when you call me, you call.
Propane gas is used in many commercial establishments, such as hotels, motels, restaurants, hospitals, and is used much in the same way as it is in residential. It is used for heating, cooking, lighting, and industrial applications, such as forklifts and construction. Propane, energy for everyone. Visit mspropane.com to learn more. That's mspropane.com.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
If you're a
listen to my bluebird laugh, she can't tell you why. Deep within her heart, you see, she knows all I cry. Just why? Yeah.
Oh. Mr. Still.
That's a good one.
It's a good one. It's a good one. You know, the question is always, how did they begin? How do you put together a band that turns out to be that remarkable?
Oh yeah.
And apparently, it was almost happenstance. Stephen Stills met David Crosby, and they're hanging out at Joni Mitchell's house, and the next thing you know, her boyfriend Graham Nash comes over, and well, they start singing.
Life
should be so easy.
Yeah.
Life should be so easy.
Stephen Stills, Neil Young, Jim Messina. I mean,
all of that.
All the goodies.
Brilliant, yeah. brilliant. Oh my goodness! You know, I know that this is the week that everybody's going, okay, when can I plant? What can I plant? And now is the time, really, to begin the process of that poorly misnamed fall garden. This is the garden that you're going to harvest in the fall, so you have to plant it in the summer. If you've never done this before and you always think, I hear about those fall tomatoes, but ... There's one thing you need to do with your tomato plants right now, and that's keep the vines in good health. If you can do that, you will have plants that we're going to make some beautiful, beautiful tomatoes for you much sooner than anybody else, because we're also planting tomato plants again at this point. If your plants went to blight or got torn up by stink bugs or any other, you know, insect or disease, or frankly, if you just didn't like the way they turned out, some folks said that everything was kind of watery, the plants grew, but they didn't do well because it was so wet, now's the time to start over. And as we speak, there are people in greenhouses across the southeast planting broccoli and tomatoes and everything else, getting ready for you to be able to transplant them into your garden later in July or even into August, of course, is when we think about so much more of that work. But if you want that one, if you want your, I don't know, Sun Gold, if you want Cherokee Rose Purple, if you've got some other tomato that you want, get your seeds and plant them now. Same is true if you're not content with the broccoli that you will find, for example, in the six-pack at the garden center in about 8 weeks. If you're not happy with that, go ahead and get you some broccoli seeds. You might want to grow a different one or a smaller one, one that's intended for a container. All of those things can be done now, and I want to encourage you to do that. There are a couple of things to consider when putting in the fall garden. One of them really is quite simply the simplest part of all, is to realize that you're going to have to protect those little seedlings. You'll grow them and then you'll plant them, and it's probably going to be torturously hot, maybe even thundery, you know, lots of storms and stuff. You never can tell about the end of the season. So give yourself that opportunity to offer them a little bit of protection in one form or another. I think you'll be glad you did.
Well, and I greatly appreciate Randy. Thank you so much, Randy and Startville, for sending us a, and I have the picture up now, but you know, hail destroyed our garden a while back, and we replanted about 4 weeks ago. A little behind, but I am ready for the first ripe tomato. He's even got the white bread.
He's ready. He's got the knife out there and all.
Salt and pepper and everything. He's just waiting. So I'm with you, brother.
I
wish you the best on that.
You're going to be a little toasty by the time it gets ripe. But the good news is that it will. And I got to say, there are markets in every town, every county, every parish, everywhere that you go right now. You're going to find people with tomatoes that are able to happily sell them to you, and sometimes varieties that you would not have run into. I saw a table yesterday with three different kinds of yellow tomatoes on it. I'm not the world's biggest yellow tomato fan, but if you got three different kinds, I'm certainly going to ask you which one is the sweetest, which one has a salty taste. You know, tell me about them, because you're in the midst of growing that many. So that's kind of fun. Randy, we wish you all the best. It won't be long. It won't be long.
Yeah, keep that appetite ready.
Beautiful Monstera. That's a beautiful plant, Paula. Thank you. And that's the reason why the little bit of shade and all of this water is why the plant not only looks beautiful, but it also doesn't have any burned leaves. Sometimes when we put split-leaf philodendron or Monstera or even just some of the bigger elephant ears, the alocasias, when we put those into an area that's very sunny, yeah, they grow great, but the first time that they get a little too hot, you end up with that browning on the tips, and that's so unattractive. I will tell you that I'm famous for just taking a pair of scissors and cutting it back into that nice point that it had before. Professionals do this all the time. That's why their garden might look a little better than yours sometimes. Something to think about anyway. But I do love that plant, and I like that she's has it in such a nice protected area, because that means it doesn't, you know, if there should be a hailstorm like there was in Starkville, it's not likely to get too damaged.
That's I haven't seen one as pretty as that. That one's beautiful.
Really beautiful. She's got the best specimen. Today's best specimen. Love that. That tickles me. I'm glad to see it. Very glad that you've got that going on. It's so pretty. We don't often think about them as display plants or as things to feature, because they're so commonly part of the tropical vibe that we put into a patio or something like that. But in this case, this is one that's permanently placed in and is just going to have that wonderful presence all the time. I do love that. I think that's really smart. Really, really smart. Oh, and finally today, my friends, are left-handers really more creative? I know y'all all think you are. Been hearing this all my life. I'm the kid that started out writing with my left hand, and because I went to elementary school in the 50s, they made me sit on my left hand and learn to write with my right. Now, according to a lot of people, that's why my brain works or doesn't work like it does, because of that fundamental change. However, Cornell University, not Australia, these are our folks in upstate New York, they have done the review. You know, they've gone in and crunched the numbers from all the other studies, and what they have found is that more than a century of research does not mean that you lefties are more creative. Unfortunately, they could find no consistent advantage. Now, there are plenty of people that are going to disagree with this, and I look forward to your emails. I'll appreciate them. But lefties, one of the things is that left-handedness is rare, and so is creative genius. But just because A happens and B happens does not mean that C happens. You know, it's got to go back to basic logic for that one. But it's also true that sometimes the overrepresentation of left-handed people in art gets overplayed, because we're looking for a reason why this is a difference. It's just a difference. It's one of those things that can be accentuated or can actually be to nobody's mind at all. As far as I know, no one has studied us who had to sit on one hand and learn to write with the other, but I will volunteer for that if anybody would like. Oh, my goodness. Thank you very much, Nathan in Smith County. It was great hearing y'all this morning. He says, I've been pretty busy and haven't been able to text, but I hope you and Lance had a great 4th. I can speak from my end of the camera. Yes, I did. I'm sure you did, too.
I took it easy. I had to come in and work a little bit, you know, and then laid low, ate good, and slept good. So,
well, that's all very, very positive.
Watched a lot of fireworks, too, until I gave up. I was like, all right, I'm done.
It's not that there aren't too many of them, But oh my goodness, there's so much, you know. There's a lot to keep up.
Impressive allotment,
with.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot of different choices and different ways to watch too. This will be a big week for me. I've got to get started planting a few beans and things for the fall garden. I hope you will too. Come back next week. We'll be back. This is the Garden Mama Show.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
We are agriculture, the number one industry in Mississippi. We are 180,000 member families strong, a century of generations. We are grassroots Mississippi in all 82 counties. We are Unified, the largest general farm organization in Mississippi. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Hey there, homeowners! Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.